Welcome to the Revolutionaries of Wellbeing podcast. I'm founder and host, Sarah McGuinness. The Revolutionaries of Wellbeing, or ROW, is a community of wellbeing managers from organizations around the globe. At ROW, we develop you as a wellbeing leader, giving you a powerful support network, professional development, and workplace wellbeing solutions so that you can focus on giving your employees the right support at the right time. To be stronger, better, and faster at improving wellbeing in your workplace, professional development is key. These discussions on workplace wellbeing are designed to inspire, share ideas, and raise awareness of important issues we can all take action on. The interviews are recorded as part of our monthly Wellbeing Wednesday webinars. With half of people experiencing menopause in their life, this is an important topic with significant impacts on work. But where do we start the menopause conversation? Learning about this life stage is the first step. In this episode, we're delighted to be joined by Nikki Bazant, writer and author of best-selling menopause book, This Changes Everything, The Honest Guide to Menopause and Perimenopause. In this episode, we'll help you understand how you can best support employees, friends or family members going through menopause, and how you can navigate menopause at work if you're experiencing it.
My background is in journalism, health, nutrition, writing, and editor. I was editor of Healthy Food Guide magazine for a long time, which some people might remember. And I've spent my career really writing and communicating about health and well-being, and particularly with a focus around that nutrition stuff for a long time. And I guess I got interested in menopause because I got to be 49. And suddenly this topic started to come up on my radar. This was just pre-pandemic, actually, when I started this whole process, which feels like such a long time ago now. But that's really when I started looking at it and looking for information, looking for resources, and kind of discovering that there wasn't much out there, really. And so I felt like there had been quite a stigma and a mystery surrounding menopause in general. And part of the reason for that is because there was just not much, people didn't know much. I didn't know much at all about this life stage that I was entering into. And so, yeah, it kind of sprung from that. And it was really a process of about 2 years from start to finish of researching and writing the book, which came out at the start of last year now. And yeah, so it was kind of a combination of life circumstances and just a general interest, because here's a whole aspect of health that really is quite unexplored and uncommunicated. And I felt that there was a lack of information aimed at me and my generation. A lot of the stuff that I did find was sort of, it felt like aimed at a different generation, aimed at older women that I didn't really relate to. So there was a lot of things that played into it. And once I got into it, it just became this fascinating journey.
And I think that's such an interesting point around that sort of lack of knowledge or that lack of understanding, because I know when we first spoke and before I read your book, I felt very much the same. I actually don't know all that much. So I thought one of the places that might be useful is if we could get a little bit of a definition around what we're actually talking about with perimenopause and menopause.
Yeah, so it is actually confusing a little bit, the terms, if you haven't heard them before. So the first, menopause is actually just one day in your life, and it's in fact diagnosed in a way retrospectively. It's the day 1 year after your last period. So if you haven't had a menstrual period for a year, then you're deemed to be in menopause at that point. But the kind of more turbulent time is all the time leading up to that day, which can be between 2 and 10 years. It's a really variable amount of time that we call perimenopause. And that is the time when the hormones are declining in general. So your estrogen and your progesterone declining, and your testosterone too. But it's not a sort of a slow, gentle descent down a hill. It's a very much a jaggedy roller coaster ride of those hormones really fluctuating quite sometimes quite wildly. And that turbulence is really what triggers and creates a lot of the symptoms that we associate with menopause and perimenopause. So it's really not just about hormones going down, it's about hormones going crazy.
Mm. And to that point, I mean, yeah, I get the impression that it's really different for different people, their experience of menopause. And so how long in duration are we talking?
Everyone asks that question. It's not an easy answer because, as you say, it's different for everybody. one in five women will go through this transition with no symptoms at all, just like no stories to tell, nothing to see here, those lucky women. And then one in five is going to have quite severe symptoms that are really, really going to be a problem for her and affect her life. And then the rest of us are kind of somewhere in the middle. So we will probably have some symptoms that make us feel, that make us, you know, that interfere with our life a little bit. And the length of time that continues on for is really, really variable. Like I said, it can be between 2 and 10 years. And sometimes symptoms persist after menopause as well for a while and before it sort of calms down. It's not forever. I think that's really important for people to know. It's actually not forever, but it can feel like it's going to be forever sometimes because it's a bit crazy. But generally speaking, it might be, you know, like 2 to 3 years that you'll have these kind of real turbulent symptoms.
Mm. It strikes me as one of those things that, you know, we talk about in wellbeing, how important control is for people, right? To feel like they have agency over their lives. And yet from reading the book and understanding some of what you've talked about, there's not a lot of control really. And you're almost, I don't want to say you're at the mercy of your body, but it will do what it wants to do. And then you're kind of working around that. Would that be a good summary?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, if we think of it like puberty, it's like the reverse of puberty, really. So, you know, it is a time of change and turbulence and transition, right? It's not in our control. We are going to go through it. If we are a person with ovaries, we are going to go through menopause and we can't control it. But we do have a lot of control over how we manage it and how we our attitude towards it and how we handle it. There's a lot of things that we can do there. And I guess, I mean, I would say this, but my whole thing is really the more we know about it, the more empowered we can feel. There's nothing worse than feeling out of control, I agree, about your body, because when you just don't know what's going on. If you understand what's going on, it's a lot easier to kind of make a plan. And our generation, I think Gen X women are kind of used to making a plan, right? We're used to going, okay, right, here's the problem. How can we deal with it? And that is empowering, that feeling.
Mm. So actually, when you were researching menopause, and you know, it sounds like you were similar and starting from a reasonably low knowledge base, tell me, what were some of the things that were really surprising or interesting or even curveballs that you found in your research for the book?
Look, there's so much stuff that was surprising, to be honest. I guess I was surprised and a little bit sad that so many women, because I talked to many women who are on the journey or who are in the middle of it. One of the things that was quite surprising was how many of those women felt like they were on their own. They felt they had no support. So that was kind of pretty upsetting. I feel like that's changing now a little bit. And it's certainly in the last couple of years, I think it's definitely changed a bit as we are talking about it more. I was also really surprised at the whole story around HRT, around hormone replacement therapy, and how that therapy had been really demonized and had really a really bad reputation, and really for no good reason. It was some poorly communicated research that happened 20 years ago, which really did a huge disservice to a generation of women because of the lack of understanding and knowledge around that treatment and how in fact quite useful it is. It was a big study that was done in 2002, which was poorly. I don't want to get into too long of a story for you, but the study was finished. It was stopped early because of a risk that they saw around breast cancer, increased risk, and the way that was communicated was very poor, and it was a pre social media age too, if you think about it. And the way that the whole story was told around HRT was HRT is dangerous and HRT will give you breast cancer, and it is something that we're not prescribing anymore. Doctors stopped prescribing it, women stopped taking it, and a lot of learning around it stopped as well. So we're only kind of coming out of that now in terms of understanding around HRT, and therapies have moved on as well. So it's a shame because there's still a lack of learning amongst medical professionals and a lack of knowledge amongst doctors and just the general public about it. So that was pretty surprising, that whole story, delving into it. Yeah.
I thought, and actually that was one thing that struck me in your book was people's different experience of talking to different medical professionals about where they were in menopause and the help that they did or didn't receive. What was some of your experience in talking to people about that?
Yeah, I think it's getting better, and I don't want to bag on doctors because I think, you know, they have a really hard job to do. And it is hard to be across everything when you're, I mean, especially if you're a GP, right? But the experience of many women has been that the knowledge level amongst GPs is a bit patchy and can be a bit out of date. So you might, if you present to your doctor with what you think are perimenopause symptoms or menopause symptoms, you might sometimes be dismissed, or you might be told, no, you're too young, or, oh, here, have some antidepressants. That happens quite a lot still. Or, no, we don't do HRT. That's dangerous, or that's not a good thing. So there's still, unfortunately, a little bit of a lack of knowledge out there. That said, I think that it's definitely improving, and the education in the medical community is improving as well. But it's still a bit up and down. Yeah.
Interesting. It's something that people are slowly becoming more comfortable with talking about. It's a slow change. So more broadly, because I love that in your book you included lots of stories. How did you find that process of talking to people about it? Were they forthcoming? Was it sort of cathartic for them to be finally talking about it? Or was there a lot of other emotion attached to it?
It was emotional all the way, really. I mean, because women were sharing really private and personal stories with me. So I felt very grateful for that, and very grateful that women willingly came forward to talk to me. And the conversations that I had were very much along the lines of, I'm so glad to be talking about this, because especially, you know, if you think like a couple of years ago, there wasn't any conversation about it. So actually just being able to open up and talk about these things with someone was actually really great. I think they really found it very, very useful. And a lot of women that I talked to wanted to get their stories out in the aim of helping other women as well, you know.
I think that's hugely powerful. It's sort of, once you get the ball rolling, isn't it? There's sort of one after another, after another. Let's turn to the workplace, because obviously this is a lens we like to put over things. What are some of the things you're seeing around the changes in how workplaces are addressing menopause? What are some of the pros and not cons, but some of the barriers perhaps that women are up against?
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm doing quite a lot of speaking in workplaces now, which I think is amazing, and I'm so grateful to be able to do that work. And I'm seeing demand for that. It's really increasing over the last year and a half that I've been doing it. I've been very privileged to go into, you know, dozens of workplaces now, either as webinars or in person, and across Australia and New Zealand. So it is something that is coming up on the radar in the area of well-being, and also in the area of diversity, equity, and inclusion. It kind of crosses over into those two groups, you know, into those two areas. I mean, there's definitely still barriers. There's definitely still the workplaces. I mean, I'm probably interacting with the ones who are at the more forward leading edge of things, but the ones who I will get approached by people in organisations who are very keen to have me in to do a talk, but they can't get it across the line with the person that's making the decision. And that's often just because of an attitude where they can't see that it's relevant, or they can't see the importance of it, or they can't see the need of it. That's changing, I believe, because it's becoming obvious, I think, to everyone who is in a senior role in an organisation that this is affecting people in their businesses. Of course it is. You know, there's going to be a billion women in a couple of years in the world who are menopausal. And so, you know, you can't ignore this massive cohort in your organisation. And most organisations in New Zealand have got a fairly big chunk of people in that age group. And so it's actually in your interest as a business to support them, you know, otherwise you're going to lose them. And we can't, as we know, with the way that the pressures are on workplaces to find good people at the moment, you can't afford to lose those people.
I was reflecting actually just as you're talking about that, thinking about the, you know, at the start we were talking about midlife and body image for this age group. Mm. One of the things I remember finding in my research was just around how that age group, particularly 40 plus, tends to be invisible, if you like, in society. There's a sense that they don't get as much, I don't know, airtime, or they're not on the front pages of magazines or whatever it is.
Mm.
Do you think that's part of why menopause has been a sort of a hidden topic?
I think historically it has been, yeah. I mean, there's a whole lot of, you know, if we talk about culture and society, there's a whole lot of ageism out there, especially for women. You know, there's a real intersection between women and aging, and you know, it's not been cool for women to get older in our culture for a long, long time. I think the difference now is that our generation hitting you know, late 40s, 50s, we are actually not prepared to be sidelined in that way. You know, like I feel, as I'm sure you do, as I'm sure anyone who is in her 50s out there who's, you know, working, we feel like we're at our height of our career, of our power, in fact. And, you know, no way are we going to be just shuffled off into the corner as irrelevant. I think so. There's a real change in perspective. We don't feel old. We don't feel past it. We don't feel, you know, ready to retire. It's absolutely not on the agenda. So I think there's a lot of knowledge and power in this age group. And if you discount us, it's a real mistake.
Mm, I think that leads so well to what you're saying earlier about that talent piece, right? Like, you know, everyone has an important role to play in an organization, and it's about making sure that everyone can thrive kind of no matter where they are on their age and stage. I'm interested, what other myths did you come up against, or do you come up against on when you're doing your workshops?
Myths. I think that there is a myth that it's something that happens to old women. I mean, that's being dispelled now. I usually show a slide of Jennifer Aniston on the cover of Allure magazine in her Chanel bikini. She's 53, you know. And to be fair, Hollywood stars are not probably ideal role models for us. But you know, I mean, what someone in their 50s looks like and acts like is different now from how it was a generation ago, you know? So there's that. And we don't subject men to those same kinds of standards, which is the other thing. There is a thing that I come across sometimes where women, usually this is coming from the women, it's not coming from the men, but the women can be afraid that actually speaking up about their menopause or raising it in the workplace is somehow admitting that they are not up to the job, or that they're weaker, or, you know, it's seen as a weakness. I think that's a bit misguided. I understand where that's coming from. I really do. And I hear that a bit. I spoke to a group of really senior medical professionals, actually, medical specialists recently, who said to me, there's no way that I would speak up about this and to my superior, my male bosses. I just wouldn't, because I would just get too much. They just felt they couldn't, you know, which I felt was really sad, especially in the medical community. But there is that feeling that, you know, am I going to be seen as not up to it, not up for that promotion, not up for, you know, being at the big table if I raise the fact that this is something I'm going through. I just think that comes from lack of knowledge and understanding. And so, again, we come back to learning. The more you know about this transition, this life stage, which is not a disability and not an illness, it is just a transition, something that's temporary that we're all going to go through. The more you know about it, the less stigmatization there is around it, and the more empathy there will be inside your organization. So it really is important, that education part of it.
Mm. And I was thinking that it sort of links back to some of those, you know, if we go right back in history, it's that kind of, you know, women being hysterical or not stable, or it's a hallmark of all of that, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, once upon a time, they used to think that women's wandering uterus, they didn't really understand anatomy, obviously. They thought that the woman's uterus was wandering around inside her body and causing all kinds of problems. And that was the reason why women were, you know, unstable and, untrustworthy and unreliable. And older women, oh my goodness, that was even worse. I've done a whole piece in the book on the history of women's, you know, women's health and menopause. And, you know, women who are older were deeply distrusted because of this whole bad blood scenario. They, you know, because we're not menstruating anymore, there's the buildup. They perceived that there was this buildup of blood inside the body, and where does that blood go? It just builds up, you know. And so many women, even into sort of Victorian times, women who we now would recognise were probably struggling with perimenopause and menopause were deemed to be hysterical or, you know, all these kinds of terms that are very gendered around mentally unstable, put into asylums. So, you know, I think we've come a long way since we thought that women were incapable of doing things because of their wandering uterus. And I mean, even if we think about pregnancy, you know, everyone understands that pregnancy is a natural life stage in the life of a woman. And this is not something that renders her incapable of doing her job. Certainly not incapable of doing a really, really senior and important job, as we saw with Jacinda Ardern, you know. Pregnancy is not a disability and neither is menopause. And we should think about them in the same way.
I love that. I heard someone else say that, you know, pregnancy is not an illness. It's kind of that same idea. It's like,
yeah,
it's a natural thing that happens. And yeah. I love that idea about menopause being that transition. That's such a neat way of describing it. Have you found there are other key messages that help to push that home, that it is just a natural part of life?
Yeah, you know, it's temporary. It's not forever. And it is actually a time, I think that, I mean, this is a hard sell for if someone who's in the middle of it all, but I do think that menopause can be a gift. It can be an opportunity because it is a time when we look at our whole life, hopefully, we might reassess some things. We might actually take some time to look after ourselves a bit more. We might prioritize our health. We might think about how we want to be healthy for the rest of our lives, because really, again, it's a transition. And what we do now in this transition will help us to be healthy for the long term. We've got a third or a half of our life left to live, right, after this. And so it's actually a great time to think about how we want that next third or half to be and make some changes, form some habits that can help us to get there. And so women that you talk to who are out the other side talk about feeling like they have a new power, a new self-knowledge, a new mana, you know, and that is amazing. We want to need to harness that.
So it's as much a biological change as it is a psychological journey as well.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely a psychological journey. And again, I think we the more we can support women through that, at work and everywhere, the more we can harness that power, because it is power.
So let's talk about in the workplace, you know, for someone who's going through it, what's likely to be their impact on their work if there's someone perhaps who's at that medium to more severe end of the symptoms?
Yeah, I mean, there can be lots of impacts. And I did a survey as part of my research as well. And the things that came out there were, I mean, the physical symptoms that can impact your working life, right? So one of the big ones is sleep. You know, having problems sleeping was one of the main symptoms that women reported to me. And when, of course, we all know when we don't sleep, everything is affected. Everything is just a lot harder. So sleep issues obviously can affect working life. Things like the hot flushes and the other kind of physical symptoms that you might be having can really be problematic in the workplace. You know, having a flush in the middle of a meeting, or, you know, in the office where you don't have control over the environment, that's distressing and hard. And then the psychological things as well. So women reported a loss of confidence quite often. And I think that relates back to some of the other symptoms. When you're not feeling your best, you feel like your confidence has taken a knock. And that can also be down to things like the brain fog, which can happen where you forget things. This has happened to me, where you just forget the names of things. You forget your train of thought. Again, it's due to changes that are going on in the brain, because there's estrogen receptors everywhere in our bodies. And that a key part where those changes are taking place is in the brain. And again, it's temporary, but it can be incredibly frustrating at the time, if you're someone who's used to communicating and then you suddenly just forget someone's name, or you forget the name of a thing or a place, or, you know, it's really, really frustrating. So those kinds of things. And a lot of women also report mental health issues like anxiety and depression, and which is, again, part of this whole hormonal fluctuation. And those things, of course, have a big impact on you at work and can really knock your confidence around. So there's lots of ways that it can affect women at work, it just and in different ways depending on your workplace as well, of course.
I think depending on the role as well, I imagine where there are some roles perhaps where you're in a more customer-facing role or something else, if there's all these other impacts that may come into play.
So if you think about it, if you're working on it in a retail store and you have to wear a uniform and you've got set hours of work and you can't just pop off to the back room if you're having a bit of a hot flush or if you're having some kind of, you know, because one of the other things is heavy periods, you know, if you're having some kind of period emergency, it's difficult in that situation. You know, you don't get to choose what you wear, so you can't wear layers, you can't wear natural fibers, all these kinds of things. That's a different situation to someone who's in a corporate office.
So that strikes me as actually getting a little bit into the weeds, and I'm keen to go there now. What are some of the things you've seen that workplaces have done really well to support women? And I guess it's part of me thinking it's people who are going through menopause now, but also those around them in terms of supporting those women and making it a normal conversation.
Yeah, well, I mean, you've touched on it there. I mean, the first thing is education. And I mean, that's what I am doing, I guess, by going into an organization and starting a conversation. That's all I'm doing really with my talk about menopause and what it is and how you can manage some of the symptoms. I also touch on some of the things that can work in the workplace. But everyone, and it's really important that everyone in the organization understands this. And so it's a shame in the way that you said that not many men are in this conversation today, because actually people of all ages and all genders need to be learning about menopause. And so I really encourage organizations that I work with to include everyone in the invitation for a webinar or whatever, because if everyone understands a little bit about what's going on, then there's that understanding and that empathy that can develop amongst colleagues. Because it's actually, while it's really important for senior staff to know about menopause and to make it known that they are a supportive, menopause-friendly workplace, it's actually also really important for your colleagues to be able to understand what you're going through as well. So everyone in the business kind of needs to be on board. And then the next thing is really putting some support in place. So I really would encourage people to think about it not just as a box ticking exercise. So don't just go, okay, well, menopause is a hot topic, we better get someone in to do a talk or whatever, and then that's good, we've done menopause. Actually, it needs to be an ongoing conversation. What it needs to become is, as you say, a normal, mundane conversation that is not at all out of the ordinary, that we just can all, you know, move on. We can know that that's there. We can mention it anytime, and it's not in any way unusual to talk about. So some of the support things that I've seen in place, and these are really businesses who are at the leading edge. The great thing would be a menopause policy. So to have some measures in place in a documented form where everyone knows where they can go to understand this. There's a bit of a toolkit, so there's some information there for people, and there's a set of measures that you've got in place, well-being things, inclusion things, that people can access and that people know how to access them. And the policies are different depending on, again, the workplace, and there's all kinds of things in those policies. And some of them might just be tweaks to things that you've already got in place, like flexible working. They don't have to be complicated. They can be, you know, quite simple. But it's really important to sort of, I think, put that all in one place. Yeah, so there's all kinds of things. There might be some things around leave policies. There might be some things around access to medical or health support, well-being, you know, services. There might be things around conditions in the environment, in the workplace, so like temperature control and bathroom access. I mean, really simple things. Quiet spaces and times, you know, even if you're working from home, some times that you block out that are not, you're not going to be interrupted. Obviously, there's things around uniforms, conversation guides for line managers. I think these are important things. How to have a conversation if someone comes to you for support. There's quite a long list of things. Some workplaces have put more informal things, which I think are great, like having menopause champions in the workplace. So finding a few people who want to have a conversation can go to for some more kind of informal support. And then sometimes they'll make groups inside the workplace. So, you know, you might have a monthly coffee catch up or a monthly lunch with everyone just to talk about menopause stuff if you want to. So I think there's tons of things that can happen.
Yeah, I love that. I was going to ask about that peer support, because that would seem to me to be almost one of, alongside those other more structural things, one of the most important pieces, because it means you're not alone, as you were saying, you know, the woman's experience, but also it starts to normalize that, hey, others are going through this. We're all in it together.
Definitely. Yeah. It's wonderful if you feel like you're not alone, you know, and I think that's, like I said at the start, that's been the experience of a lot of women in the past, where they have just sat there feeling awful and feeling like they're the only one because no one else is talking about it. And, you know, I think it's really important for senior women in particular to actually talk about it too. You know, I think that's a hugely valuable thing for the women coming after you, or the, you know, the women below you in the organization, to see that you are experiencing this as well and to understand that it's okay to talk about it. And to know that if you do talk about it, you're going to be supported.
I think that's so powerful. That really talks to that storytelling, doesn't it? That you can still be in those roles and still be effective and achieve what you want to and go through this at the same time and feel supported. Yeah. I think that's so powerful. Were there other women you've seen come across who have done that storytelling piece and it's had an impact?
There definitely are. I mean, I interviewed some women for the book. I interviewed Teresa Gatting, actually, who is obviously a very senior woman in New Zealand business. She did not talk about it. She said she didn't have a rough time through her menopause herself, but she said that she feels like the senior woman that she sees now, and she mentioned Antonia Watson at ANZ. Yeah. Just had a little menopause brain fog moment there. She mentioned how much she admired her because of the way that she had spoken out about her own menopause. Antonia has written and spoken about it herself. And, you know, for someone in that level of senior role to be talking about it, I think is really powerful.
Mm. And it really helps to set the tone, doesn't it, across the organisation around it being an acceptable topic to talk about.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah.
Jumping to it, what advice would you give workplaces to better understand and support those going through menopause? Like, if you had like two things workplaces are going to take away from this, what would they be?
They would be, it was to start with that learning education, I think. That's the first piece, right? So the more that you understand about this transition, and the more you acknowledge the people in your organization who are going through it, and the more you educate everyone in the business about it. So just start a conversation, you know, get me, get someone else to come in, or do it yourself, you know, just get a group together and talk about it, but make sure that you include everyone in the business and try and normalize that conversation. That would be the first thing. And then I would say just talk to your people and ask them what would be the things that will support you. You know, what do you think the things that we could do to help you through, what would be some really useful things? Don't assume that everyone wants to talk about it or that everyone wants support. Some women just don't want to, and that's fine. But make sure that you really kind of dig into what would be helpful from a, you know, really kind of understand what women want, or what people in menopause want. I should say, I talk about women all the time, but in fact, non-binary people and, you know, trans people can also experience menopause. So it's important to acknowledge that as well. So I think it's learning and then thinking of support and then just ongoing communication around that support. So making it known that you are a menopause-friendly workplace and that there is support here if you need it. I think it's not hard. It's not groundbreaking stuff. It's the same that you would do for someone for mental health issues, for example, I think, you know, and we've certainly done a lot to destigmatize those things in a working context. And I think that this is the next one.
Mm. And then so for women who are going through, and again, I use that term generally as you do too, yeah. Going through menopause at the moment, what's some life advice, some advice from your own experience that you would share with them?
I guess, you know, you're not alone. That's the main thing. You're not alone. There's many of us who are all in this together. And the other thing is, of course, it's not forever. It is temporary. And just think of it as a part of the journey that we're all on. And it's, you know, it can be rough, and it can be one where we do need a bit of extra support, but it's not going to be something that is forever. And so you know, keep in mind that you are going to come out the other side. And to be kind to yourself. I think women we're pretty bad at self-talk. We're pretty bad at the negative self-talk and beating ourselves up for what we feel are our failings. This is a time of all the times to be really, really kind to ourselves.
I love that message so much. And as someone who is it's on the horizon, I have to say, reading the book gave me such a great insight into actually starting to understand it, because I didn't know much at all, but also some confidence in knowing that there is lots of support and ideas and things out there. One of the only men joining this, I'm interested in your perspectives as well.
Yeah, it's been really, really interesting, because I mean, prior to meeting you for the first time, Nikki, I knew very, very little at all. And there's been a lot of myth busting. And I think probably when you say that what you do isn't groundbreaking, I'd actually really challenge that, because it's something that isn't talked about. And I have a question. I'm not sure how to phrase it in the right way. And what advice would you give organizations to try and broaden people's horizons or get more men involved in this conversation?
Yeah, I mean, the point that I always make is that if you know a woman, then menopause is going to affect you, yep, right? So while men might feel like a bit icky about it, they kind of need to just get over it, because in fact, the men who do show up to my webinars or talks in person that I talk to, most of them are really interested, actually, and they're very keen to learn, and they actually really do want to be allies. We need men. We need you as allies. It's great to have to be supporters, but we actually need you to be allies with us as well. So I think if you interact with a woman, and most men have got a partner or a colleague or a sister, or you know, they've got someone in their life who is in this age group who is going to be in this transition as well. And so it's actually very useful to understand a little bit about how that might affect you. I've got a couple of pages in the book which is for men. Like, here's some things, like bullet points. So you don't have to read the whole book. You can just read the bullet points. And you know, I think that the more men who kind of just feel comfortable with this topic, the better, really.
Awesome. We just had a message from one of the other men on the chat saying, Miki, no, it's really informative, interesting, and lots to take away for our business to think about. So thank you for being here sincerely, because I absolutely 100% endorse your comments, Nikki. It is so important for men to understand and learn what being a really good ally looks like.
Yeah.
And the fact that it isn't that hard, and it's not going to, you know, turn your world upside down. It's just about being a good colleague, a good supporter, a good boss, whatever that might look like. And I'd like to turn over to a couple of the other questions that we've got in the Q&A. And has Nikki considered looking at endometriosis with a similar lens that has been applied to menopause? Is there any link between endo and early perimenopause?
Two very good questions. Endometriosis is such an interesting topic. And to be fair, I have, with my other hat on as a writer, I'm writing health features now for the listener quite regularly. And I think that's definitely a topic that I would like to look at for the magazine, because endometriosis is another women's health issue, which, I mean, we could get into a whole big conversation about this, but it's another one that I think the average diagnosis for endometriosis takes 9 years. It is crazy because it's often undiagnosed or underdiagnosed or dismissed. So women will show up with these terrible symptoms and be told, oh no, that's just normal, that's part of being a woman, which is terrible. And it speaks to a whole other conversation around how women's pain is dismissed and, you know, a lot of women's health issues get minimized rather than recognized. So yeah, I think it would be really, really interesting. I don't know if I could write a whole book about endometriosis, but it's definitely something that I could do something on. And then the link around menopause and endometriosis, I don't think we know. A lot of the things, another interesting surprise actually about menopause, when we talk about surprises, was that there's a lot that we don't know about menopause, because it's just literally has never been researched. And I think that endometriosis and menopause and that intersection is a bit of one of those things. I don't think we know if there's a correlation between endometriosis and early menopause. I did attend a seminar for doctors recently where they touched on the impact of endometriosis, of HRT and endometriosis and the interactions there, and that is kind of interesting, emerging. But in terms of whether you've got a chance of being in early menopause, I don't think the answer is known there. But there can be some extra issues for women with that condition because there's a lot going on there hormonally.
That reminds me of a comment that you made earlier when we were first talking about this session, is the fact that we really don't know a lot about menopause at all in general. It's criminally under-researched, isn't it?
Yeah. We don't even really know why we have it. I mean, really, it's just theories out there about why do we have menopause? There's only us and one certain type of whales who go through menopause in the animal kingdom, and we don't really know why it happens. It's like there's just a couple of working theories that they've got at the moment, but there's so much that we don't know.
I'd like to jump to another question that we get through. So I'd love to understand your view on leaning into other ethnicities' view on menopause, using Te Ao Māori as an example where wahine experiencing the transition is seen as a medium of whakapapa, so genealogy for those who are unaware, that connects Māori women to the pantheon of Atua, or deities. How could these beliefs and this belief system support women at a deeper level?
That's such a great question, and I have done it. I did a small section in the book on that. I think that Pākehā can learn a lot from Te Ao Māori in this respect because, you know, in the Māori world, women, older women, are not seen as irrelevant. They are seen as powerful. They have a whole lot of mana. They have a whole lot of respect. They have a whole lot of responsibility in the community. And they really are honored. And I think we should all the cultures should be heading in that direction. I think there's a lot to learn from the Māori world. And I think it's definitely an ideal. It would be amazing, wouldn't it, if we all felt that way.
Just on that point, if I can jump in, across other cultures, were there other interpretations or perspectives on menopause that you've seen?
Yeah, there are some, and to be fair, I didn't look into many other cultures, but there's definitely places in the world where there's that same respect and honouring of older women. Some of the Asian cultures that happens, Japan is one that springs to mind. But yeah, it's very much Western, sort of white Western culture where we have this really misguided idea that women who are older are irrelevant. I was saying this to a friend the other day. I am waiting for the day when we can have a conversation about whether a woman is too old to be the president in the US, you know, because, like we're having about a man now, an 80-year-old man.
It feels like there's a lot of bridges to cross, doesn't it?
I know. Still. Yeah, that's probably not going to happen in my lifetime, I guess, but. Yeah, wouldn't it be amazing if we were having that conversation about a woman?
A thought that occurs around this, and it's a topic that I'm quite passionate about, is this interlinking of the concepts of well-being and DEI.
Yeah.
Because I don't think you can have one without the other. And again, this is one of these horrible things that men often do, starting something when this is more of a comment than a question. But I'd love to get your take on sort of how well-being and DEI interact and that relationship there.
Yeah, well, I mean, you're right. I mean, I can only speak from the perspective that I have around this particular topic, but it seems like there's a lot of parallels in other areas of well-being, you know. Mm-hmm. So I mean, and like I said, menopause is a topic that really crosses over. It's a DEI thing as well as a well-being thing. And I know that from the people who approach me, it's either from companies, it's either the chief people officer, or it's the DEI person, or it's the well-being person, and it can be any one of those to approach me to do something on menopause. So it's one of those topics that really it crosses over because if you are not well, then we know from the data that's starting to emerge across the world now, women in menopause, unfortunately, if they don't feel supported, there's evidence that they're stepping back from senior roles, that they're even leaving the workforce, right? because of that. And that's a direct well-being thing, but that also totally affects the diversity and the equity in your workplace. And we know that there's not enough women in senior roles and across the board, and that we are going to need those women in the future. And I also think that the women coming after us, you know, we've got the older millennials now hitting this age group. We've got the Gen Z after that. Those women aren't going to put up with not being supported. And so I think, it's a huge crossover. It applies to mental health stuff. It applies to any kind of health issue, health well-being issue that you're going through. If you're not supported in the workplace, then chances are you're going to leave, or you're not going to stay, or you're going to step back. You know, I've had women tell me that they stepped back from promotions, that they didn't feel they were up to it because they just didn't feel supported. And then, you know, the worst case scenario is that they do leave. And then you've got a problem with not enough women in senior roles. So, that's kind of long-winded, but you can see the tightly interlinked relationship. Yeah.
Hugely important. Actually, again, real sort of side question here, but I was just thinking about it as you're talking about it. You know, with sort of generations now, or across those generations now on social media, and that was a thing that obviously that wasn't around, you know, a while ago. Do you think that's also helped to increase the visibility around menopause? Is more women talking about it on those bigger platforms?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I'm saying that because I'm on Instagram and I'm in menopause Instagram in a big way. Like, that's all I see. But I actually, you know, I know that younger women are following this conversation, and I know that that they are feeling a lot more prepared and empowered, really, because we should all know what to expect, right? We should all know what is going to be coming up in our future. And then we just feel like we've got a handle on it. We know how to deal with it. We're not surprised, because a thing that happened to generations before me and a lot of women in my generation as well is that you just get to this thing that happens to you and you're totally blindsided. You don't know what is going on, you know. But women talked about waking up feeling terrible, like just particularly the mental health stuff, you know, waking up feeling like a crushing depression that they've never had before, and not for a long time linking it with the hormonal stuff, with the perimenopause, because it just didn't know that was a thing. And so that shouldn't happen.
Mm. And I think to your point, that's where that education is just so critical. I was reflecting that, you know, at school, usually they cover puberty, and that might be the last time that you have education on your hormones, unless you follow it yourself.
Yeah, so in the UK, where they're, to be fair, they're a long way ahead of us in the workplace stuff and in general in menopause education. They have now included menopause in their education curriculum. So when you learn about puberty, you also learn about the other side, the end of puberty or the end of your reproductive years, which is menopause, which makes total sense, right? To learn about it at school so that you know that that's something that's coming up in your future. It's kind of a no-brainer, but yeah, we don't really do that here yet.
Yet.
Yes.
I love that. Chris, you have a question?
Yeah, an interesting little tidbit. So I had no idea of the links between sort of hormones and estrogen and sleep. You know, sleep I normally associate with like melatonin or something. But when you mentioned that, you know, sleep or insomnia and things like that was a big issue, that was something I actually didn't know.
Yeah, there's a whole chapter in here. Here's my book. There's a whole chapter in here on sleep, because sleep is such a big issue for women in menopause and perimenopause. It's something that can really go south. And there's a lot tangled up in there, but there's definitely a hormonal component. And part of it is with flushes and night sweats. If you are waking up regularly because you're flushing, you have, like a hot flush at night is called a night sweat. If you're getting woken up 2, 3, 4 times a night, that is completely destroying your sleep. And the other thing that women talk about is not being able to get to sleep in the first place. So really just losing that ability to fall asleep. It's a massive, massive issue. There's lots that you can do, and HRT can really be helpful there as well. So there's lots of things. And I do sort of go through from the lifestyle end of things, like what are the things that you can do, the real practical lifestyle things, all the way through up to medication things. And of course, for everything, for all of these things, there is not just one solution. It's always like a big puzzle, big holistic puzzle, and you need to look at all of the pieces not just go straight to a medication or a supplement.
How do you know when you are at the end of menopause?
How do you know you're at the end? Well, I mean, like I said, that menopause day is a marker. So if you haven't had a period for a year, then you're like, okay, great, I'm now officially in menopause. And then from there, ideally, things will just start to calm down. You will have fewer symptoms and you'll start to feel better and more yourself if you haven't already. It's like, how long is a piece of string? You can't really know when the end is, because it's different for everybody. But if you are on HRT, that's a different story, because that is sort of evening out the symptoms. And so you won't know really until you transition off that medication and see how you are. Then you'll either have no symptoms and you'll be good, or you'll still have symptoms and then you'll still need to be on the therapy if you want to be. But it's tricky. It's a tricky one to answer that, because it's different for everybody and you kind of just have to experiment.
Mm. Which I think is probably a neat way of rounding it out, because I think, Nick, if that's one thing I've taken from this conversation, is that there's absolutely some fundamental foundational knowledge we should all have. But then sitting over the top of that is that everyone will have a unique experience of going through it. And so therefore those things and organizations that do offer flexibility depending on what symptoms you're going through, that peer support is really critical to share those stories. But also, yeah, whatever we can do to start reducing the stigma and just making it a normal everyday conversation will help people to get through it, get to the other side, and feel as empowered as you're talking about, and that level of confidence.
Thanks again for listening today. It's been great to have you along. If you're keen to join the Revolutionaries of Wellbeing, head to rowellbeing, that's rowellbeing.com, and follow the links to sign up. If you're in our community, thanks again, and we look forward to catching up with you really soon.